podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello there. So the football continues to rumble on as we come back to you in yet another interim type pod. This game week is still ongoing, but during its build-up, we saw perhaps one of the finest examples of herd mentality I've ever witnessed on FPL socials, well, at least for quite a while. Alongside this, there was a mass shoving of heads in the sand, following a soft yellow card for the doubling captain du jour, Mitrovic, which rules him out of the second game this game week. I only captained him for Leicester, hashtag variance. Perhaps as an example of how expectations require a safety net at times. I'm back with Lucy after what's felt like a little while. We obviously missed the New Year's Day window for a pod, given other commitments outside of FPL. But now we're back together for a short stint, but one of us jets off again. But here we go. Lucy, you're right. Let's make a pact before we even start to not even utter the word Saints throughout this one.
Yes, it's good to be back. Thank you. We won't mention Saints, although I hope our listeners heard all of my warnings on avoiding all of our players because they've fallen even below my very, 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 very low expectations. So well done, Saints. Anyway, moving swiftly along, we are Who Got the Assist. You can find Tom on the main account at WGTA_FPL, and you can find me, Lucy, at Lucy Hynett. On the pod today, we'll begin with general chit-chat about the week and the events leading up to it, primarily, as Tom has alluded to, the Mitrovic captaincy. Was it herd mentality? And should there be regrets? We'll then move on to a few other general discussion points from the week before we take a look at structure again. In my absence, Tom mentioned how my World Cup wildcard setup was all about structure. So we'll discuss how we might end up progressing as we go on. And then we'll finish off with a look ahead to next week's potential double, although we won't have all the information yet. And that's because we're recording on the evening of the 5th of January during the second half of Chelsea-Man City, primarily so that I don't have to watch the inevitable second half hold from Erling Haaland.
Oh, that's not going to happen, is it? I never get nice things, Lucy, as we'll come on to in just a moment. But yes, as Lucy said, I think it is just general chit-chat, you know, carrying on from a kind of pod I did with Adam last time out last year in 2022. I should say Happy New Year. I should have said that at the beginning. Do we still say that on the 5th of January? I suppose it's kind of the 12th night now, isn't it? Like, you're meant to take all your Christmas decorations down today. But yes, this pod will go through some of the salient issues found out by the game week, as Lucy said, as it's unfolded. And that's kind of going to be the main format for this pod, and probably the next one with Nick and Lucy next week. We'll get back to the single topic stuff eventually, once this period of blurry game week lines gives way to a clearer week-to-week separation over weekends. So no mean league, no market forces today, as the game week is obviously still in play. But I think it's worth mentioning very quickly how we did on the week we missed, as well as how it's shaping up this week, to give us an idea of how recent progress has gone, and also allow us to springboard into the main discussion, I suppose. So let's start with last week. How did that go for you?
I mean, you said the word progress. It wasn't so much progress, more another red arrow, which is great. I got 51 points, so that was another bad week. Shafted by that Cancelo benching, which I'd convinced myself wouldn't happen again, and it did. And then
Cancelo has been subbed at half time.
Well, come on, Chelsea. Moving on. So great. Cancelo's probably being sold soon. Yeah, so I was shafted by him last week, as I will be this week. And I also fell victim to the Ben White 59th minute sub, which I think a lot of people were. I'd kind of told myself that I didn't need to do anything with Reece James because I had Ben White. That didn't work out. And I think it's fair to say that Kevin De Bruyne is probably testing our patience at this point, given that he blanked yet again. He hasn't been subbed at halftime as well, has he?
No, he's still one. Okay. How frustrating. So what was the overall score last week? Sorry.
51.
No, I think I got very, very similar to you, actually. 54. So not too much more. It was a very small green on the first week back, and last week was a small red for me, and that was the final game week 2022. Bit of a horrible one for me, actually, in many ways. Obviously, I had the no-show from Cancelo, so I got 0 points from Estupinian off the bench. But it was a really horrible one just because I was all out on Saturday, so the 31st of December. So I spent New Year's Day busy with other things, luckily, but also just waiting to see how big the Red Arrow is going to be, because I didn't have any Spurs players when they played Villa. Luckily, we lost 2-0, Kane did nothing. And Chelsea play Forest. Luckily, again, that was 1-1. So I avoided a bit of a big Red Arrow there. It was a small one. I think it was 46K to 51K. It was just purely appearance points, which took me down. So, I mean, that was 2 points difference, something like that. And so if I, you know, bought Dunk, he got an assist and 3 points, I'd have got a grey arrow or a small green arrow that week. Very, very small differences. So this week, I rolled the transfer into this week, made a late night transfer, actually, the day before the deadline, having suddenly realised I could do a particular move, which was Cancelo and Greenwood to Shaw and Mitrovic, which has worked out pretty well. 19-point positive swing with Cancelo going off at half time here. So that's
why would you say
bad.
That again? Why?
Sorry. I'm glad I confirmed that one, because I wouldn't have been able to afford it otherwise. I wasn't sure on Mitrovic throughout, as we'll discuss in a little bit. I wasn't really interested in captioning him. This isn't me talking hindsight. I did say that on the last pod with Adam as well. And I kind of bought him in to hedge my bets, basically, thinking that if I own him, at least if he doesn't hit the EO of 100% plus, then I'm still going to game if I own him. But at least I'm not completely exposed if it goes really, really wrong. I did take out my second transfer, but I mean, that was just kind of just a condition of the double game week being there. And also it gave me another, a single doubler, who's now a singular. But yeah, okay so far overall, I guess. I'm on 51 plus whatever Haaland and KDB give me today. Ramsdale clean sheet, Trippier clean sheet, Rashford goal, 3 points for Saka and Martinelli. Darwin. And Estupiñan, to continue this stream of annoying form, lost the clean sheet to an Everton pen in the final seconds. Last kick of the game, I think it was. So I brought him in for Robertson. Brought him on for Robertson. Robertson was on my bench. So I still made 1 point. But yeah, annoying to lose the four. But the star was obviously Shaw. You know, the goal was completely random. It was his third ever goal in almost 300 Premier League appearances. That's mad, isn't it? And the 15-pointer, that sort of thing you really need to help you with the likes of Kane going off, much to my chagrin. And then tonight, let's just see what happens throughout the course of the pod, but I don't have high expectations given how the first half was. What about you? How is it shaping up this week?
Well, I made exactly the same moves as you. Well, I bought in exactly the same players as you. I didn't make the same moves. I bought in Shaw for the injured James. I should have done that the previous week, but I wanted to hold on for more information. I think a lot of people fell into that trap. So I kind of missed out on Shaw's 8 points last week, but I did get his 15 points this week. And then I kind of finally went through with Mitrovic. I'd always thought I would buy Mitrovic. Probably I was a bit more convinced on him kind of way out before the week than you were. So I structured my team around a 3-4-3 rather than a 3-5-2, simply because I wanted to make it as easy as possible to bring him in when the double came, which hasn't really worked out because I've missed out on Saka's points. So, you know, in hindsight, not great. But I knew I wanted to do it, so I'm fairly kind of happy with that. So I did a simple Martial to Mitrovic move, and I did captain him. So I guess that probably opens up the beginning of the conversation.
It does indeed. So main discussion point, or the first discussion point really, is that Mitro captaincy, or maybe just a wider kind of exploration in the short time we've got on today's pod for just bigger single decisions in terms of Mitro captaincy. I mean, you said obviously you fancied him for a long while. Did you sway on the day? What was the experience like for you?
I know the answer. Tom knows I swayed on the day. I had gone backwards and forwards the whole week. I'd then sort of settled on Haaland. And then the closer we got to the deadline, the more I kind of feared I was being a wimp. I think when you look at Twitter and you are part of a community, you need to be clear about the effect that community has on you and your relationship with that community. So I know for a fact that I tend to be more conservative than the Twitter herd. So I try to keep that at the back of my mind, knowing that they're always going to choose something a bit more out there than I would like. But I also wanted to acknowledge the fact that I had basically built my team around the fact Mitrovic should come in this week. And I did think he was one of the standout captaincy choices. Literally the one thing in my mind which was stopping me from doing it was two things. One, the booking. Because as much as people wanted to convince themselves that for some reason Mitrovic wouldn't go into a tackle because he was one away from a suspension, or he might not talk to referee in the same way because he's... I think that was rubbish. I don't see Mitrovic as the kind of player that tempers his behaviour in any way. Like, you saw from the tackle he did, it was completely unnecessary. And I know some people argued it was soft, but from what I'd seen, he was kind of, you know, mouthing off at the referee, making funny tackles. It was an accumulation of issues that got him that booking. It wasn't that one challenge. I think people kidded themselves on that one. So I was very open, like my eyes were very open to the fact that that was a risk. And then the second factor was Haaland's effective ownership. Like, we knew it would be 150 plus. So I just kind of reasoned those two things out, really, and came to the Mitrovic conclusion with 2 minutes to spare.
Yes, yes. I mean, definitely your eyes are open to the fact it was a risk. I mean, I didn't really... We'll come on to maybe discussing social media in general in a minute, just because it's just worth chatting about for this particular environment or this particular example. But I mean, I knew there'd be a fair tailwind behind Mitro, but it was incredible, like, you know, just 10, 15, 20 minutes before the deadline, to see how many smoke clouds went white for the Serbian. It was just amazing to scroll through and see what people were doing. I think that was the moment I texted you, sorry. To say
you did.
I
kept myself off there. I was like, no, I'm not going to look. I'm just going to try and work it out myself. And then you were like, gosh, you could see, Twitter. It's Mitrovic everywhere. And I was like, oh.
Sorry. Yeah, I feel like, yeah, it's one of those, isn't it? He may still beat Haaland. You never know. But I know that everybody was there, and I know the algos were there too, things like that. I did think about it, but, you know, with 5 minutes to go, I just thought, you know what, I'm kind of fairly set on Haaland. I don't want to kind of just fear FOMO myself into going with Mitrovic. So I purposely got up, made a cup of tea, you know, went for a walk outside in the garden and came back in, and the deadline had gone by that point, so it was fine. But it's definitely an emotive moment, isn't it? I don't mean like how people say, oh, well, I got emotional and I started
classic
crying.
Woman, right?
But like, it's always... oh, yeah. Well, no, yeah. Gender roles, eh? But yeah, I think it's definitely one of those moments where, like, seeing everybody else do something has a tangible mental impact on how you are as a human, and boiling that sort of high theory down to the shabby world of FPL, it really proved this week, I felt, for a lot of people, because I'm sure there are those people who were weighing up Haaland and Mitro. The points you made about Mitro being kind of really clear, sort of, yeah, but what aboutery pull factors towards Haaland. But there's always a sort of push factor towards Mitrovic as well. And I'm fairly sure that there's definitely going to be a tipping for some people that they see, you know, their favorite content creator, or they see kind of, you know, loads of content creators all seemingly going on one person. And I just kind of wonder whether we kind of think about this for a second, as I mentioned, like, is social media to some extent to blame for this week? And also, you know, countless decisions in the past which have prioritized double game weeks over what perhaps could be sensible play. For example, last year, the mass captaincy of Emmanuel Dennis when Harry Kane scored 12 points the same game week in a single game week just because he had a double. Like, we always say we're in control of our own decisions, but are we? Like, are we really? I mean, I think that it definitely has an impact. I mean, you're fairly active on Twitter. I used to be incredibly active. I'm now sort of more passive than anything. I mean, do you feel like it has much of an impact on your decisions?
I quite like to use it, not necessarily to guide what I'll do, but to kind of have an understanding of where other people's thinking's at. I think it's very, very, very easy to get sucked into the idea that the Twitter bubble is indicative of how the general FPL populace plays. And I think what was interesting this week was that you talked about FOMO and around Mitrovic and all that kind of thing. For me, the FOMO was more about missing Haaland. So, because I knew that the majority of casual players would captain Haaland. And I kind of concluded in the end that that was more of a guiding factor for me than the Twitter bubble around Mitrovic, because I think you and I both discussed it and decided that it was unlikely that Mitrovic would hit 100% in terms of effective ownership. It seemed likely it would be like 80-ish. I don't actually know how much it ended up, but it was about that, wasn't it? So I was actually more worried about Haaland from an ownership perspective than Mitrovic from an ownership perspective, because in a sense, I'm not really playing against the people on Twitter. I'm playing against everyone. So in terms of what could damage my rank, I was more worried about Haaland than I was about Mitrovic. I think here it's like a little bit confusing because you kind of got the effect of two herds, just the one you see and the one you don't. So a bit confusing.
The invisible herd. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it is an invisible herd. Yeah, the invisible Haaland herd, which will be there every single week. If you want to gamble against captaincy, that's not going to go away. The majority of casual players will carry on captaining him until he gets injured. So that's a bit of a weird factor to fit in. I think people commonly think that Twitter is indicative of what everyone else is going to do. They get obsessive about having a certain player on Twitter that everyone else seems to have. I don't think you need to do that. And I think people have been sucked into that millions of times before. I think you need to kind of take a step back and think, how much are they likely to be owned by looking at the percentage that owned them last week, how much their overall ownership has increased this week, what that might have on EO. But I think you need to be quite careful about that. But I think in this case, actually, Mitrovic wasn't necessarily the FOMO pick. That's the argument I'm making. I hope you like it.
Right. Okay. No, I think, maybe for you, definitely. But I can imagine having been in the situation myself in the past where I have been swayed by seeing lots and lots of people going for one individual that I wasn't going for as default has had an impact. And I'm sure it has an impact on loads of people who have, as I said, following loads of people who then go off and do things. And you do feel like, oh, what do they know that I don't? Or, you know, what if they all have a great time and I'm stuck here in the mud? Like, it's quite a difficult and pernicious thing to deal with, like the social media kind of voice, the social media impact. And I've just found that progressively over time, maybe it's kind of my length of tenure as an FPL person on there, but I've just started to really step back from it. Like, I've taken huge steps this year to ignore the social media voice. Like, obviously my team's pretty template, but that's not entirely because of Twitter. Like, some people may retort that you just follow the Twitter thing, but simply
so put, you follow me.
Yeah, exactly. And the template is a template for a reason, right? We say that every year. It's anyone with a passing interest in FPL should have an idea who the key assets are. And so this year's pricing friendly environment, it's just so easy to cover most of the bases apart from bloody Kane. But I think the key realization for me, Lucy, was this. I decided to stop looking at FPL social media as an information source and start looking at it as entertainment. I'm just not particularly interested in most things which are put on there now. Like, it definitely feels like it's not even the bubble, it's like a Dyson sphere. Like, it's made of that kind of, you know, next tech metallic plating and ideas to kind of bounce around and get their own sort of life. But I can't remember the last time I saw something FPL related on there, which isn't like, you know, team news, which I genuinely felt was new and fresh. I feel like, you know, it's just got to that point now where it's quite like a beige sort of environment space. And I don't know, it's one of those things where you just use it as entertainment or, you know, a way to pass the time. But I've kind of just increasingly just kind of tried to keep my own thinking aside from it. It can be very involving, as you've said, but often it kind of can be a bit more of a hindrance than a help, I find as well. And that's why I've just tried to step back a little bit in terms of engaging as much of it, at least kind of acting on it, you know?
Yeah, I don't think you should be following what accounts are doing on Twitter without having a clear rationale in your own head as to why they're doing it and whether you agree with that. I think looking at people's screenshots of their teams and saying, oh gosh, they've got that person, I don't have them, why do I not have them? I don't think that's going to be particularly productive for anyone involved. I think if you engage with people and discuss things with people and you're convinced by the points they make and you can come up with decent kind of responses to your own doubts, that's another thing. But I think, yeah, scrolling through and panicking is never going to get you anywhere. But as much as the Mitrovic thing went wrong, I don't think I have regrets about doing it. When he scored that goal, I kind of thought to myself, oh yeah, this is why you've gone for it, because if it all rolls out, it could be brilliant. Could get a goal or assist in this game, could get a goal or assist in the next game, and you know, you're laughing. So as much as it backfired horribly, I think I would do it again in the same position. I hope this time it's kind of taught me a lesson that I wouldn't like leave it to the last couple of minutes. Yeah. But I did learn last season where things really fizzled out and I got really stuck in a rut, that by being too conservative, I found it really difficult to move rank. So I'm trying to push myself a little bit more to be a little less conservative in situations like this, where you think Haaland's captaincy is going to be slightly dented and you think that there's a decent kind of momentum behind another option to try and take that, even if it does come with risk. And it probably came with a little bit too much risk, maybe because of the booking, but, you know, one of those things.
I think what's interesting, though, is to take your kind of invisible herd idea out of the equation and look at what we saw, which is that everybody was going Mitrovic. And just kind of a cursory look through my mini leagues, I think I'm going to guesstimate about 80% of people in Mitrovic this week. And I think that kind of is an impact of, like, we've spoken about it ad nauseam on the pod, that you do have this sort of discrete gap now between people who, oh, it's a goal.
Oh, no.
It's going to be something. It's Mahrez and Grealish, of course. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on. The difference between people who follow content creators and don't, and whose teams begin to mirror those content creators, it really just, although you're trying to kind of push yourself out of being conservative, you're doing the same move that all of the people who are also pushing themselves to not be conservative are doing, if that makes sense. So yeah. You kind of end up in mini leagues just kind of doing the same thing that everyone else is doing. So in some ways, you could have reframed the argument. So people said, oh yeah, we're going with Mitrovic, I'm going to put myself in a position to get lucky. But maybe if you look at mini leagues and think, well, actually, most people are probably going to go with Mitro here, a position to get lucky may well have been also to avoid Mitrovic and kind of just insulate yourself from double game week. That's just a way of reframing.
I guess it depends if you're interested in mini leagues. I'm not really that bothered. So I tend to look at, like, overall figures.
Yeah, no, fair play. I mean, do you think that mini double game weeks going forward then? I mean, this is an interesting one because obviously you had the World Cup wild card, and people, loads of people ended up with Fulham and Chelsea players because it was just easy to kind of work your way into ensuring you could get them in, like you said earlier on, with getting Mitrovic and 3-4-3. I mean, what are you going to do going forward? Is it still going to be one of those things you take on case by case, or are you going to try to just be a bit more sceptical about these sorts of situations? You said earlier on that you were quite, you'd do the same thing all over again. I'm sure there'll be a situation in not very long, maybe even next week, where you've got a mini double game week.
I think it's slightly different because we're talking about mini double game weeks in terms of not having those fixtures clear, waiting on FA Cup results, all that kind of stuff. So you can't really prepare in the same way. I mean, the great advantage was that although I didn't have Mitrovic, I could make a slot for him, and you kind of got a quite clear idea about how you're going to get there. For these kind of unknown mini double game weeks, you don't have the same kind of preparation opportunities. And I really would kind of urge people not to be too sucked into the FOMO bubble when you see these kind of mini double game week options open up. I really wouldn't be cutting your team to ribbons to try and fit them in, because I think unless they've got kind of long-term prospects, they're probably going to scupper you more than you'd like to admit. That said, I am quite interested in Harry Kane. But, you know, that's a different case, isn't it? That's a guy that you're not there just for the double game week. The double game week's a nice perk, but he's, you know, on track to equal one of his best ever scoring seasons. So, you know, he can't be too bad, can he?
That's an interesting point to move on to, actually, because, I mean, there were a few questions we got this week about Harry Kane having scored a fairly decent haul with the brace and the assist as well. Slightly questionable assist, I'd say, but an assist nonetheless. Points are points at the end of the day.
Not that we're bitter. No,
definitely not. C&G asked if Kane should come in ahead of a potential double game week, Arsenal and Man City, if it does get finalised. A friend of the pod, Sam, if you're pricey, asks you if you would bring in Kane for a hit. He says most will need to free up funds. And FPL Kudos says, question from Captain Hindsight, why were so many of us sleeping on Kane during the World Cup wild card? So as you said, yes, Kane's numbers are very good. Goals scored, XG per 90 is now the highest it's been since the 2016-17 and 2017-18 seasons, when he scored 29 and 30 goals respectively. His XGI is around the same level too, and he's back to overshooting as well. So last year he undershot his XG by a significant amount. This year he's overshooting again. So all of those things sort of coming together potentially for him. And I guess, Lucy, he's going to be one that loads of people go to, despite the fact that he, again, is on 4 yellow cards and he's playing what could be a testy North London derby. Admittedly, I did look earlier on, just for fun, the percentage of their Premier League career that Kane and Mitrovic have got yellow card in games. I think Kane's was like kind of 13% and Mitrovic's was 17%. So, i.e., absolutely useless to look at. If anyone cites that, just ignore it. But it definitely feels like kind of last week all over again, except there's even more, as you said, of cutting teams to ribbons to get him. That's the guy simply poos points, despite Spurs looking a bit rubbish. And I think that he's definitely one that I'll be looking at eventually in the future. For example, I've got Darwin, bloody Nunez, who we're going to have to mention in a second, and Mr. Mitrovic at the moment. I can move them both out for Kane and Ferguson quite easily. And I think that maybe that would be something I do in the next few weeks. I need to sell a defender first, but all doable. I mean, you said you're interested in Kane. You've got a way to get there, haven't you? Very, very quickly.
Yes, so I don't have points at the moment, but what I do have is cash. So actually, as prices stand at the time of recording, I have 0.1 slack for Darwin to Kane, which I want to do, but I also need to wait on these FA Cup fixtures. It's a bit annoying because I think the prices will push me into making a decision one way or another. I think in terms of asking if you take a hit, I think that's much more complex because if Kane has a double, Haaland will have a double. Is that how it works?
Yes.
So you probably won't be captioning Kane. So you're not going to see the immediate payback on your minus four in a way that you would have in previous double game weeks where you bought Kane for a double and captained him. And it also probably negates his threat to your rank. Like, he's not going to explode. Like, he could have easily gone way above 100%. In a similar situation without a Haaland in this world. So I don't know if it's as clear cut as I would normally say on Kane on a double game week. That said, if I had a neat way of getting rid of two people I didn't like, I probably would look at it quite closely. I'm just conscious at the moment people have got a lot of good midfielders that are returning points. You could end up sacrificing one of those unnecessarily to pay for him. And that might not be such a wise idea. Don't know what you think on that one, Tom.
Yes, I think you've got to do something quite careful. You've got to be quite careful. The thing is, as I said right at the start, it's such a friendly pricing environment this year that you don't really need to worry about it that much. You can find a way to turn your Darwin bloody Nunez into Harry effing Kane fairly pain-free. I think that, you know, normally we'd be looking at owning, we'll talk about defenders in a minute, but the likes of Cancelo, the likes of Robertson or Trent or something like that, and be kind of, you know, a minus eight and a bit of a surgery, team surgery away from bringing in a player like Kane. This year, it feels like everyone's kind of two FTs or maybe a hit away from getting it done. It doesn't feel as hard, that the barriers aren't quite in place to swap around and bring in players like that. And as you said earlier on, in terms of the players you're going to bring in, if you're buying Kane, you're not really going to be doing too badly in terms of just general hold. Like, he's not going to be a player that you're going to be moving on anytime soon, I suspect, unless he gets crocked. Because, I mean, after a fairly tricky period, admittedly, he does have Fulham in 21, Man City in 22, Spurs actually do fairly well against Man City, actually. His favourite team then, Leicester in 23, leading into a fairly decent run all the way until game week 31, which only comprises a game against Chelsea of the top six last year. So he could be a player that if you do get him in early, he could do you a job over the next 10, 11 game weeks easily. And that's not bad at all, really.
And then you'd probably be into your next World Cup phase soon after that anyway. I think also what you're saying in terms of being able to find value quite easily, I'm just thinking, if I was in a different situation where I didn't have this money in the bank, right now I'd be looking at Cancelo, who's been subbed to half time, who's now played a half out of three games. Do I really need him? No, I don't. He's probably just going to tank in value as well because people will be selling him en masse. Probably the similar for, I mean, we'll probably get onto it, but Liverpool defenders, Trent looks all right-ish, but Robertson not so much, and I don't know. They just don't keep enough clean sheets, so they'd be fine as cash cows as well. I just think I'd be more tempted to pull money out of that area of the pitch to buy Kane than a lot of these midfield players that are doing very well for relatively small value. I mean, I think it's someone like Saka is probably the most expensive in terms of strongly returning players at the moment, especially given that Salah and KDB aren't really doing it either.
Yeah, no, I think most people, as you said, that Cancelo's ownership was still pretty frighteningly high. So I think there's definitely one of those things where people can suddenly find loads of money. I'm sure Kane's EO is going to rise pretty quickly. So if you are looking to take a hit like Sam was, or like CNG, just assessing whether he was worth buying in, I feel like he's going to increasingly be kind of a necessary shield. And maybe one I'll have to look at next week. I mean, I need to take like a minus eight to bring him in, but I need to think about it potentially as long-term investment, but I'm not sure at this moment. And plus, you know, they're playing the two strongest defences in the league thus far in Arsenal and Man City, and Kane is on four yellow cards. So you've got to bear that in mind. I may just watch and wait on that one. In terms of what FPL Kudos said about why were so many of us sleeping on Kane during the wild card period, I just think it's one of those where, one, you were trying to fit in Haaland, KDB / Salah and all of these different sorts of players, and maybe there wasn't quite room at the inn for Kane alongside Darwin, who was going to be quite in just a sec. And also, I'm sure there are those people who kind of thought there'd be a bit of a hangover on the personal disappointment of missing the second penalty against France. I think that probably was in a lot of people's minds in terms of whether Kane would be as effective as he has been.
And I think there's probably also a structure and flexibility point. You know, every time I looked at one of those drafts, you just feel like because Haaland is such a kind of fixture and you can't do anything with it, it means you were pulling so much money up front, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it probably means if Kane had had that hangover, it was going to be a bit more awkward to shuffle funds around. So I guess that's also another factor in it. I don't know if people necessarily kind of ignored him. It was more that, as you said, there were other priorities, really, because we knew that he was kind of trickling in points fairly consistently.
Yeah, it adds that kind of higher floor to your game week, basically.
Yeah.
Because, you would captain him in some circumstances, but mostly it's a perma-captain Haaland season at the moment. Hasn't scored yet, by the way. It's a perma-captain Haaland season. And with Kane, it's just a way of kind of almost having like a defender who gets clean sheet every week. Like Man City of old or Liverpool of old, if you've got the centre-back or something like that. You just have that sort of thing, 6-7 points you can count on week in, week out, which just bring your score up ever so slightly. And a player like that is definitely worth the money. Even if you're not captaining him. I see those people who always say that. Why are you spending X million on a player if you're not going to captain him? Well, in a season like this, that's irrelevant. It's an obsolete kind of point. The getting to Kane does tend to mean Darwin bloody Nunez is the one who's sold. I mean, me and Adam were speaking about him last week, and kind of, which is now two game weeks ago. We've experienced the FPL assist and also the performance last game versus Brentford. And it's fair to say that obviously the best way to watch him is via a spreadsheet rather than in person.
Definitely for the stats, not the grass lot, isn't it, really?
Exactly. How are you dealing with the Eeyore vibes? Is he staying for you for long?
If I didn't have this nice and easy Kane route, he probably would be staying. He's much more at threat now. I don't think people should despair on him because he is getting opportunities. And I know he's making a hash of them, but I'm getting very strong ketchup bottle vibes off him. I think that, you know, they start to go in and I think they'll keep going in.
Mm.
The question is when that happens and if it ever happens. because he is really, really awful to watch if you are an FPL player.
Oh, so bad.
So bad. But yeah, I think like everything he's doing until he kicks the ball towards the net is great. It's just that last bit. And so I can see why he's infuriating people. I think he's in a very fortunate position at the moment where he doesn't have a huge amount of threat to his position just because of the injuries they've had. And I think even when Gakpo comes into the team, he's probably not going to play that kind of role anyway. So he's got a bit of luxury at the moment in terms of people not being an immediate threat, and he can probably get away with a dodgy performance or two or kind of squander chances. I think as players start to return, it will become a lot more uncomfortable. And that is when people are probably going to get forced into positions if he hasn't started scoring points. At the moment, I probably wouldn't panic on him, but it takes a certain amount of willpower and you probably will lose a bit of value on it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. He's already dropped 0.1. Luckily, we both got him in pre-World Cup wildcard, so we had that 0.1 buffer, but I suspect he is going to start dropping as people start to sacrifice.
Yeah, I do wonder if that brace before the break is making you and I less worried about it. If Maybe. I bought him in and maybe I hadn't got that return, maybe I wouldn't be feeling quite so kind of philosophical about the situation.
Yeah, old cash in the bank, isn't it? I suspect that next week, unless I do get feared into Kane, I'll probably give him one more week and hope that that Brighton game becomes a bit of a goal fest. But other than that, he is not long for my team, that's for sure. And just maybe worth a side point, actually, on Liverpool in general. So they're very interesting. Just a bit of a behemoth of fantasy football at the moment, where you can feasibly go without them and live quite happily, thank you very much. And we had a few questions on them. So Dane Bramage, which I quite like, asked if any Liverpool assets are viable. And Andy Martin asked if any Liverpool assets will Liverpool assets become differentials in time? Because it certainly seems that way. Pete MF Doom, on the other hand, was wondering if we can chase the dragon to be early investors on Trent, who you mentioned a second ago. Tempted by Trent, he says, Liverpool defence looks shaky. No Van Dijk, but is that a bad thing? But yeah, Trent with 2 assists and 4 bonus in the post-World Cup games. I'm tempted to get going early, he says. Are you guys? So, I mean, it's one of those where it seems like people aren't sure whether they're coming or going with Liverpool at the moment. For me, it definitely feels like a case of going in the last chance saloon. Like Robertson, I own at the moment. If City get a double game week next week, he's definitely going probably for Stones or something like that, just to make sure that I've got that kind of City defence covered. And how many games you've got left? About 17, 18. Half of them will be clean sheets, given how City tend to roll. So I think that'll probably be fine. It should give me good value over the course of the season. Looks like the kind of a nailed man. And it really does look like, elsewhere of Liverpool, I want them to get out of their funk, really, before I'm interested. And I'm sure the double game weeks, when they do come to Liverpool, will be when everyone kind of streams back onto a Salah or streams back into Darwin, who may have ketchup bottled himself all over the Anfield turf by that point. We don't know. Are you the same on Liverpool?
Yes, pretty much. I mean, we talk about getting in early on them. I mean, are we expecting that they'll improve significantly before the end of the season? I don't see it personally. I know Van Dijk had a bit of a horror show against Brentford, but I don't think his absence makes them better defensively. And as much as I think Trent has improved since the World Cup, I think a break has done him a lot of good, actually, and he does look better. I don't think his performances on their own, even if he does start getting assists, are enough to make me interested. I think when Liverpool were worth owning, it wasn't just that their fullbacks were phenomenal attackers, it was that they also had clean sheets. And at the moment, they just don't look like giving them. So I find it really hard to kind of make myself look that way, particularly if we're talking about how you're paying for someone like Kane or moving money up the pitch. I'm not interested, really. Obviously, we're both on KDB, so I haven't really looked at Salah recently. I expect that when fixtures shift, I'll look at him again. But he doesn't look great, and I don't know how their returning players will improve that. I think there's more scope for them to improve from an attacking perspective than there is from a defensive perspective because of those injuries. I just think it's one of those things where you just shouldn't overthink it. Like, you shouldn't go looking for points that aren't there at the moment. Let them come to you to a certain extent. Obviously, you don't want to be stuck behind a template when they become popular, but we're a long way from that, I think. And I think you're better looking at, Arsenal, for example, full of value. Just concentrate on those players. And if you don't spend all your budget, you don't spend all of your budget. Like, I think for what they are, a lot of Liverpool players are very expensive.
Absolutely. I mean, if you want to widen that out, just look at the defence in general as well. Having spoken about Darwin, and obviously the point about Salah probably falls in with Darwin, that he's underperformed where he should be. With the defence, to answer Pete's question a little bit more, I sat up with Robertson and Cancelo. Those sort of big defenders like Trent, I've already exited on one and I'll probably be exiting on the other as well. And now, as Lucy said, a lot of it it's about not overcomplicating it and just looking at the data and kind of, in terms of what we've got since the World Cup in the cold light of day. Sure, obviously the big hero this week, got double game week coming, a couple of kind of potentially tricky fixtures off of that. United's run's great. 5.1, I think he is now. I got him at 4.9. Like, that is a really cheap player who could potentially, throughout the course of the back end of the season, be well worth the value, but his value could exceed his price.
Trippier, I mean, yeah, at the moment, if Shaw and Robertson were the same price, I'd want Shaw. Ditto Trippier. At the moment, they don't. Even if it was that they were the same price, I still don't think I'd be interested. And that in itself tells you all you need to know about investing the extra funds in Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so Trippier this year, if they repriced it, like Mark FPL General mentioned, kind of the first part.
That would have been cool, wouldn't it? It would have been good.
But he'd have been 6.5, wouldn't he?
Yeah, easily.
So, you know, ridiculous. So, and then you look at Newcastle in general, the second best defence at the moment, and the have conceded the fewest goals in the Premier League, second to Arsenal, second with 13, Newcastle only conceded 11. Feasibly, you could have a defence of Shaw, Botman, and Trippier, two starters at 5.0, one at 4.5, and that could do you for the foreseeable future. Like, shove Ramsdale in goal like I have, and you've got those defences covered. I mean, that's the way we are, where we are at the moment. And you see a real defender sort of cash drain, really. Yeah. And that enables things like the freemium, where you could have a KDB / Salah plus Kane plus Haaland fairly easily, no matter what your team value. Like, the team value sort of mining that happens at the start of the season does some years have a real impact, but this year, I don't think it does.
Yeah, and also, we thought when we restarted that someone like Cancelo was worth paying for because you were getting the nail bullets in the City team. Well, you're not getting that anymore. And as you've said, Stones looks like the more nailed on prospect. And again, that saves money. So it's very difficult to make a case for spending much on your defence at the moment, which has basically inverted pretty much everything we start with every single season, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. So I feel like we've kind of gone back to the old days of having a cheap-ass defence.
Yeah.
Maybe shove the big boys up front. I think the only real thing probably is structure that may be a little bit different this year and may kind of mirror how we tend to end most seasons in that lovely 3-5-2.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So last week with Adam, I basically made a bit of a case for 3-5-2. I know that obviously people were busy, so it didn't really come across to loads of people, I'm sure. But to reiterate what I said, the amount of viable midfielders this year makes the 3-5-2 really hard to overlook for me in the back end of the season. So, you know, magically, the emergence of Evan Ferguson made some visionaries in the community comes to the same conclusion 2 or 3 weeks after I did. But you know, with Salah, KDB in the one premium, and you've got Saka, Martinelli, and Odegaard, probably two slots for those guys. Rashford, Almiron, emerging forces like Rodrigo, viable, things like Mituma and Son as well, potentially bursting back on the scene.
Some of the Son rhetoric is
No, that's just wannabe, isn't it? But, I mean, surely there's got to be scope for a rethink on the 3-4-3 eventually. Like, earlier you said you set up in a 3-4-3 to make sure you could fit in Mitro, etc. But given the wealth of options in midfield, and as we see most years, the midfield does tend to be the source of both explosivity and also just kind of generally the most points in FPL. It's got to be the case that should look at that midfield really in terms of viable FPL options, given where we are now. Obviously, things can change.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think I was kind of always getting to this point to reassess to a certain extent. I certainly hadn't ruled out 3-5-2. In fact, I'd looked at it quite closely. I had a draft that had Saka and I had a draft that had Martial, and that didn't go very well. But yeah, I think you're right in terms of 3-5-2 probably being the optimal play from a value perspective. And I think it's probably something I'll look at as soon as I'm able to roll a transfer, because I don't really like taking the hit for the restructure. So it's really just when I find the opportunity to kind of flex it, because especially if Tony is in a position where he's going to get suspended, which seems likely, and he is currently injured, I can't see that third striker spot being that viable going forward. That's my theory. So I think it will have to end up with the 3-5-2. But, you know, you don't know what doubles will present. It may be that I get enticed into some other random forward.
That's why I end up Mitrovic, who's now my first sub, basically. So that's kind of, you know, the situation you find ourselves in at times. But I really think it's going to be one of those where if we end up with Kane being quote-unquote needed, Haaland being needed, whichever one of KDB and Salah emerges as being kind of worthwhile as well. And the fact we don't really need those premium defenders at the moment, that kind of lends itself very nicely to that freemium. And it reminds me of that kind of couple of years ago, where if you had Kane, Son, Bruno and Salah, who you could fit them all in your team that year. If you had them all, you'd be absolutely fine. So maybe it's a case of being able to fit those players in pretty quickly, even if it is Kane for the floor and Haaland for the ceiling. Having those players in as early as possible and just having that template from here on out. If it does end up that in that sort of idea, then that might be something that's worth thinking about, or at least kind of getting ahead of the game on before other people can kind of maneuver that way. It's just something that I thought was worth interesting. Right, it's okay, it's a double game week. I guess we need to see the fuller picture. We are just in the last throes of the Haaland captain blank, which is always lovely. I'm sure I'm going to captain him again, but are you going to triple captain him, Lucy, if it comes to pass? I mean, it does look like it's very likely that they will get the double game week. I'm not going to bother with the calendar stuff. That's not really for me. I mean, I don't know if you've looked into it really, but I do think that this is the week everyone does go for the triple because it's quite early in the season. Despite the games not being the best in the world, I think we'll see 200% EO being over 200% BO. EO being a probability for Haaland this week.
Interesting. I mean, it's quite difficult because, as you said, the fixtures aren't great. But the problem with the triple captainship is when you start doing wild cards and double game weeks and bench boosts, etc., it becomes a bit of a headache to work out when you're going to get it out. On top of that, obviously, we haven't got the Champions League restart, so there's probably a little bit less pressure on Haaland in terms of worrying about starts and all that kind of stuff, minutes, etc. So I get it from that point of view. But I think there's something in the back of my head that says I want to wait for a really good one. And from what I'd read of Ben Crennan's tweets is that it's likely that City will get a couple of really good ones that far, you know, outweigh the ones we're seeing now. So I think it's unlikely that I'll commit that early. I always have this thing with chips where I probably put too much pressure on the end of my season because I keep them believing that a better opportunity is around the corner, and I think it's probably the case that I'll do that again. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. The only thing I was thinking in terms of Haaland's EO and in terms of what you were saying in about it being potentially about 200%, I do wonder if we may be slightly underestimating the temptation of Kane and whether some people not in the Twitter community but casually speaking, look at the fact Kane scored this week and the fact that Haaland may blank, although we've got a couple of minutes left. I wonder if that might twist things slightly, yeah, but I don't
maybe.
Know.
Maybe people will be like, he's done a goal, therefore.
Yeah, exactly. Form, isn't it? It's form.
Yeah, hashtag form. I mean, yeah, certainly. Certainly, I think it's certainly interesting. I just wonder whether people will think, oh, Haaland's the highest goal scorer. Yeah, he didn't score against Chelsea, but Chelsea are a hard game.
I don't really know how the psychology of the masses works.
I know. This is why we're not politicians. But yes, it's definitely certainly one of those I think will come in. And then in terms of buying for double game week, I mean, I'll be, and this kind of links into transfers and captains a little bit, I'll certainly be looking to, as I said, I've saw Robertson hanging around. I'll probably be swapping him out for a City player. So mostly free out of funds because I've got 0.0 at the moment. But I probably won't be going too hell for leather on this double game week. It doesn't, again, doesn't look great, no matter how it all kind of spins out. I think there's a couple of teams, you know, Leeds and Crystal Palace could have a double game week. And you know, I'm as much as I like, you know, players like Rodrigo, who does look a fairly decent sort of prospect.
Yeah.
You know, when people start spinning out why they should own Zaha, or you know, people start captioning those sorts of players or buying in the likes of Mark Gahey or something like that, but that's when it starts to get a bit face palmy. So it's one of those where, again, it's not the best double game week in the world on paper for the bigger team. So it's not really something that I'll be really going mad for. And plus, you know, I'm fortunate to have KDB, Haaland have done enough for me this evening. Shaw and Rashford, and hopefully the Manchester clubs, if they get a double, I think I'm probably okay with how I've kind of set it up. Are you the same?
Yes, I think I am likely to buy Kane, but I don't know. Cancelo's presented me with a bit of a headache because if he doesn't start the next game, which seems very possible if he subbed at half time, he isn't the nice safe bet on a double game that I thought he was going to be. So that's possibly one to look at. So maybe I'd rather just strip back there and free up some more funds. But it is getting a little bit silly because I do already have 2.8 million in the bank. So I don't entirely know what I'm doing. What I would say is exactly what you've sort of said there, was I wouldn't get hooked into buying players on a double game week if you have no intention of keeping them beyond that double game week. I think particularly if we're looking at going quite a long time before we wildcard again, you don't want to be lumbered with a load of players that are just 1 week punts that you'll grow to resent and wonder why you spent all the money on it. So I would just be careful there. I think someone like Kane is great because, as we've covered, you can keep him long term. I think a City defender makes plenty of sense because someone like Stones, you should be able to keep long term. And if you don't, he's not a disaster if you have to bench him. So I think just be careful and mindful about the transfers you make and whether they benefit you long term and not just for a 1 week mad punt that you come to regret.
Classic Heinert response. I like that. It's just like a, if I could do your voice without being demeaning, I'd have been able to reel that whole thing off. Absolutely fine. it's like if I stood in for Nick next week and just pretended I was Nick, I'm sure I could do it. And I think that's really interesting. Just for the final question this week, which was Charlie Messenger, who asked, to what extent does your rank influence your risk level when making decisions in the second half of the season? I think you kind of spoke really to how if you're doing all right, blank, that's the full time. If you're doing all right, then you're not going to be making loads of kind of, you know, big, high profile sort of punts. But if a double game week does turn out to be something which is quite kind of off the wall, you know, you get the likes of Zaha comes into play, or you know, Rodrigo comes into play. I mean, I guess if you're not doing as well, those sorts of players do come on the radar, don't they?
Yes, they do. I think you have to make kind of calculated reasonable risks and not kind of get carried away. So, for example, I do think, and I alluded to it earlier, there were really good reasons to try and maybe take a punt on Mitrovic. And it looked like, until right now, that had backfired, but apparently maybe not. I think those kinds of punts where you can see that the leading captaincy is likely to take a dent, there's a bit of momentum behind a player, that kind of thing, there are opportunities. What I wouldn't do is A, avoid really popular players that are doing well because you think that some other player is going to do really well based on not a lot. I think people get sucked into that all the time. They look for a differential for the sake of looking for a differential. In the end, that costs them points. So I wouldn't do that. And I think you also need to be careful about making sure that you have flexibility and a decent structure so you don't just throw a load of punts that lead you to a dead end. So that's where I'd go on that too.
At least you've got your wild card things.
That's another thing. Don't use your wild card as some kind of weird backstop. So, I can just do this, and if it goes wrong, I can use my wild card, because you've then wasted your wild card at a time you don't need it. So carry on.
I was only going to say, I feel like, as I told you many times, I never get nice things, and especially seems to be that case this week again, which is how annoying.
But anyway, you can get back to wishing for that Pereira red card now, can't you?
Yeah, exactly. And Kepa to be swapped with Mendy for, yeah, God knows.
Isn't he injured?
No. I don't know what's going. I don't know what's going on there. But yeah, I'm glad there's a bit of a break now. I'm glad that I'm having a break too. Because I'll be in Hong Kong from next Monday. So I'm going to give the next pod a miss due to the time difference. Nick will be stepping in for what he promises will be a Darwin Nunez-type chaotic performance alongside Lucy here. So I imagine that's going to be an editing nightmare. I think it'll be another interim-type pod given the double on the slate. Again, we're not really too sure how that's going to look, but we'll kind of figure something out around it. And we will, I promise, resume normal service in terms of more single-issue analyses once we hit game week 21 in late January.
I look forward to the chaos next week, perhaps more than you do. And good luck with editing it. I will try to make it a cohesive pod, despite Nick's best attempts. If you do have any ideas on what you'd like to talk us to talk about, please do let me know. But I will put a tweet out for people to respond on. Thanks for listening. We were Who Got the Assist. You can find Tom on Twitter at WGTA_FPL, and you can find me at Lucy Hynett with two T's. If you enjoyed listening to this, please like and subscribe to the podcast. For new listeners out there, if you think you'll be coming back, please hit that 5-star rating across platforms like iTunes and Spotify so more people can enjoy the pod.
Cool. Yeah, thank you very much for listening. I will speak to you in a few weeks. We'll be back next week-ish. I think it's 2 weeks, technically, isn't it? Yeah, because yes. I think I'd fair round this week.
Yeah.
In the meantime, thanks for listening. I hope we assisted you. Farewell. And have a good FA Cup third round weekend off. Speak soon.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.